today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Just yesterday, some interviewer asked us something about whether the song Ricky Don't Lose That Number, whether the word number in that song referred to a marijuana cigarette.
Hello and welcome to Rockin' the Suburbs. My name is Patrick Foster. On behalf of Jim Linehan, I'm going to welcome you to today's episode. Hope all are well and all are getting prepared for the big 1970s album bracket countdown. We're trying to find the greatest album released in the United States in the 1970s. Before we jump into today's topic, which is directly related to that countdown that we're starting today, February 1st is the kickoff day. I want to remind you that January new music did happen. Calls are coming in. Voicemails are coming in. The Suburban Party Line is lighting up. So we want you to include the albums that you liked in January. The deadline is a little later this month. It's February 11th. That's Sunday, February 11th. So as you hear this today on Thursday, the 1st of February, you have a full week and a couple of days to get your picks together from January. I want to thank everybody who's already done that. Just heard from Dr. Bob Peterson, sent in a pick. So we want to do that, keep it going. The podcast, New Music Train, waits for no one. Okay, with that little bit of business out of the way, I'm going to focus on the concept of this 1970s album bracket. It's coinciding with March Madness, as we did last year with American bands. And this one was a little different because Jim and I worked quite a bit on narrowing down this list. And obviously, you can't include every album that was released in the 70s. You only get 64. We felt there were certain artists that needed two albums because of their stature, certain iconic albums from, country music, soul, world music, reggae, things like that. We tried to get a good balance. And as you know, we said, it was popularity, critical acclaim, the impact and influence, and lasting appeal. Does the record stand the test of time? So there's a lot of groups that fell outside of this category and didn't make it onto the final 64 list. And I want to focus on one of those today because they were an extremely popular band in the 1970s. Through 72 through 1977, they released an album each year, and all were successful, all had singles that were pretty well known, and that band is Steely Dan. The duo, Walter Becker and Donald Fagen. And I would say, too, because their studio albums were so well produced, so well put together, they were often nominated for engineering and production Grammy Awards, things like this. Producer Gary Katz worked with the band on these albums, starting off with the very first one. And they recorded a lot of these things in Los Angeles and crafted that Steely Dan sound that you know. But what is the Steely Dan album? Which one would you put on a list of 64 were it to make it? I found this to be a very interesting question. Now, I'll run through them really quick. I'll give you two candidates, and I'll leave it out there for which one might be the best Steely Dan album. And then you can ponder whether or not you think it deserved inclusion. Obviously, Jim and I didn't think it did, but that doesn't discount the work of Steely Dan in any way. I love their music. I have a really great box set, a 4 compact disc set called Citizen Steely Dan that I think pretty much covers it. All the music they put out. So they started out with their debut album in 1972, Can't Buy a Thrill. That came in number 17 on the album chart. It had two singles, one called Do It Again, reached number 6, and Reeling in the Years reached number 11. Now, the two sources that I use to sort of evaluate records released in the 1970s are the Rolling Stone Record Guide, the new Rolling Stone Record Guide, which I've talked about on an episode of this podcast, and Robert Christgau's Rock Albums of the 1970s. I believe that book really made a lot of sense of the 70s and the music that came out and the artists and the personalities. And I think it's a fantastic guide to albums released in the 1970s, written by someone who was there reviewing them as they came out, seeing these bands live a lot, and had a tremendous knowledge of all this. So the Rolling Stone Record Guide awarded 4 stars to Can't Buy a Thrill, and Robert Christgau gave it an A. In 1973, the band came back with Countdown to Ecstasy, made number 35 on the album chart, had 2 singles released, Showbiz Kids and My Old School. Neither of them got above number 60 on the singles charts. Rolling Stone again with 4 stars, and Robert Christgau again with an A. 1974 was Pretzel Logic. It was their highest charting album so far. Ricky Don't Lose That Number was one of the singles. The other one was the title track, Pretzel Logic. And Ricky Don't Lose That Number was number 4. And I believe that was their highest charting song ever. And Pretzel Logic was number 57 at its peak. Rolling Stones gave it 4 stars, while Robert Christgau gave it an A+. The top-rated Steely Dan album for him. 1975 brought Katie Lied. It made number 13 on the album chart. The singles didn't do all that well position-wise. Black Friday was a 37, and Bad Sneakers failed to crack the top 100. Rolling Stone, only 3 stars, but Robert Christgau an A-. So he gave the first 4 Steely Dan albums at least an A-. 1976 Royal Scam. The Royal Scam, probably one of their least known records, still made the top 20, 15 on the album chart. The singles were Kid Charlemagne, which peaked at 82, and The Fez, which peaked at 59. Rolling Stone down to 3 stars, and Robert Christgau with a B. And then finally, Asia, 1977, number 3 album chart, their highest selling album. They had 2 singles from this. Very well-known Peg was a top 20 hit, coming in at number 11. And Deacon Blues also made the top 20 at number 19. Rolling Stone gave it 4 stars. Robert Christgau, a B+. Now, having said all that information, there are 2 albums that I would consider to be the Steely Dan albums. One is the first one. The second is the last one. So let's take a look at Can't Buy a Thrill, the first record they put out. Starts off with Do It Again, goes into Dirty Work. It's got a song called Kings, Midnight Cruiser, Only a Fool Would Say That, Reeling in the Years, Fire in the Hole, Brooklyn Owes the Charmer Under Me, Change of the Guard, and Turn That Heartbeat Over Again. Some very cool songs on this record, but does everyone know the song Brooklyn Owes the Charmer Under Me? That's a pretty cool track. This is the only Steely Dan album to include a singer named David Palmer. After he was a guy they brought in to sing lead vocals after Donald Fagen wasn't so sure he would be the guy to sing live when the band went on tour. Now, I think behind the first three Steely Dan albums, they were still a working touring band. And after that, they sort of turned into a studio-only band. It's got a freshness to it that was unlike a lot of music that was released in the early 1970s. It had some jazz and like mambo elements. It had this kind of soft rock style that was pretty new at the time, and featured, you know, like Do It Again being an example of a song with a really catchy kind of mambo-ish, you know, Latin jazz rock beat, but was accompanied by downbeat lyrics, really, about, you know, somebody who really is a 10-time loser. So I definitely think out of the six that would be in consideration. And then I think Asia would be the second one for me. Let's look at that. It's only got 7 songs on it, which is really interesting. The shortest track is 3 minutes and 57. You had 8-minute song, 7-minute song. They really polished these pieces. They used a ton of L.A. studio musicians. I mean, it's a who's who of players. When you look at the personnel on this record, it goes on and on. Every song had a different lineup with many, many people coming in. But once again, like all the other albums, Gary Katz was there as the producer, you know, being part of that group. This record is often credited as one of the albums that started the yacht rock movement, which some think really peaked with their 1980 album Gaucho. It has been discussed as a classic album many, many times. This jazz-influenced idea of jazz-influenced soul or white soul music and this super polished, slick, radio-friendly, FM-friendly sound. They recorded a song called FM a little bit later than this, but it's very much in this vein. And it's got a kind of ubiquitousness for me. Not quite a teenager in the late 1970s, almost there, but really starting to first discover music and listening to the radio, you know, in 1977. And what can you say really about a song like Deacon Blues or a song like Peg? Yeah, pretty indelible, imprinted on your mind if you're of a certain age and spent a lot of time listening to the radio as an adolescent or preteen or even in your teenage years or college years. I'm sure if you were college age in the 70s, this was pretty ubiquitous music too. But I think one of those two would be the one I would choose if I had to choose one. Obviously, Jim and I didn't believe that it's one of the top 64, but that doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the quality of Steely Dan. I'm a big fan of Steely Dan. And I think it's cool to sort of look at and address some of these artists that you might think would have been on this top 64 but weren't. I know that Kirk Gallagher made a few comments today, and we're going to look around and see if others have particularly strong feelings, and maybe we'll spend a little time discussing those records and the merits of them. But I thought this would be a kind of a cool way to kick it off. I want to remind you that the voting for this bracket is taking place only on Facebook this year. So go to facebook.com/suburbspod. The mechanisms to vote will be right there. You can cast your vote. You can watch during the day to see how it's coming out. Bill Mulligan messaged me, said he's going to actually listen to both albums that are in the matchup before he casts his vote. So it'll be out there each day. We will periodically check back with you and have some updates based on how the brackets are going. Probably when all the first round matches are complete, we'll get together with some of our pundits. Our resident pundits, and discuss how it all went and discuss the matchups for the next round, just like we did last year. It was a whole lot of fun, really engaging. And, you know, as we said on yesterday's show, doesn't seem to be a clear favorite here. So it's going to be a lot of fun. All right. With that, we respectfully say Steely Dan, keep on rocking your Steely Dan LPs. Which one's your favorite? Let us know. And we're going to close out with another track from the Steely Dan debut album. Sounded fresh and completely different in the year 1972. We will talk to you guys tomorrow.
That you think is gonna last. Well, you wouldn't even know a diamond if you held it in your hand. The things you think are precious, I can't understand.
Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the years, stowing away?
I've known you, I still don't know what you mean. The weekend at the college didn't turn out like you planned. The things that pass for knowledge I can't understand.
Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the time? Are you gathering up the tears? Have you had enough of mine? Are you reeling in the years, stowing away the time?
The writer of that article, as I recall, would ask us questions about what we had in mind with some of the lyrical content of songs, and refused to believe what we were telling him. And when we finally did get to read the article, it was clear that, you know, he had made most of his conclusions in advance, and there was no dissuading him from pet notions that he had developed over the years.